When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. Craig Mish, David Maddock, reviewing the NBA games last night and going into tonight's games as well, helping you set some DFS lineups. We got afternoon baseball to get to, so we'll have a preview of that. And of course, tonight's NBA game as we head to game two of the Eastern Conference Finals. But Davis, good morning. Hopefully, good night for you in the DFS scene. And not such a great night for Luka and the Dallas Mavericks as Golden State, essentially from start to finish, dominated this one. 12 boards from Steph Curry too. Pretty big performance there.
Yeah, I mean, this was one of the things that that we discussed yesterday when we were talking about how this series might go. The Warriors are sort of thought of as an offensive machine, right? But the actual best quality of their team this year has been their defense. And I think one of the big questions heading into the series was what would happen with Kevon Looney. The Looney-Draymond front court is just unbelievable defensively, but Looney obviously not a particularly great offensive player. However, when Looney goes 5-for-5 from the floor, only commits 2 fouls, it's just going to be pretty – like if they can get away with Draymond and Looney on offense, it's going to be very hard for the Mavericks to score. I think the Mavericks, a little bit of just happy to be here from them, I think, which I don't blame them. No one anticipated them making the conference finals or beating the number one seeded Phoenix Suns. But I think even at the very short odds that the Warriors are available, I don't think they are a bad bet to win the NBA championship right now.
Yeah, well, 4 teams left. Of course, we'll whittle that down to 2 after the Eastern Conference and Western Conference finals. I don't know. I kind of think Dallas is going to come back in game 2, but obviously they're going to have to look a lot better than they did in this one, no doubt. All right, let's go to our headlines here as we begin on this Thursday. Warriors just dominate this game. As Davis mentioned, big game for Steph Curry, 21 and 12. Really, though, Draymond Green's defense was just incredible last night. Luka only 21 points. Golden State wins. Some bad news for the Mets. When have we said that over the last 5 years? Here we go again. Max Scherzer takes himself out of the game in the 6th inning. He's having an MRI today. It was not on his arm. It's on his left side. So we will have to see what happens there. If there's some speculation, maybe the oblique, if that's the case, at least a month for Scherzer. But again, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Let's get the MRI first. No MRI needed at this point. Well, I guess he had one already. But Chris Paddock undergoes Tommy John surgery. He is going to be out for the season. For those of you who are familiar with prospects, once upon a time, Chris Paddock, a prospect of the Miami Marlins, and also had Tommy John surgery. So this is the second time, unfortunately, for him. And the Calgary Flames beat the Oilers 15 goals last night in this game. 9-6 final. I know, Davis, your Avalanche play tonight, and I guess tearing at the heartstrings a little bit against St. Louis, if I'm not mistaken. I think Colorado's like -250 or something tonight. Really tight game, though, last time.
It was tight because the Avalanche could not put them away. I believe they had 40 shots on goal in regulation, but like I think they had over 70 shots period, you know, including just all shot attempts. They were all over them. It was kind of like Craig, you don't watch soccer, but just kind of one of those games where one of the teams is just they have the ball the whole time and just they cannot get anything to go into the net was a little bit frustrating to watch. The Mets, though, I think they probably are going to end up weathering, honestly, this Max Scherzer injury, assuming that it's not season ending. They are 6 games ahead in the division. There are no winning teams in the NL East other than the Mets. The Phillies, Marlins, Braves, and Nationals all have losing records. And kind of interesting, I don't really know what they're going to do for starting pitching, because Tyler McGill also is right on the 15-day IL, 15-day IL after his most recent start. I believe that David Peterson is available for them. I think he's on their 40-man. I'm not sure if he is injured or not, but they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to make a move, have a couple bullpen days or something like that, because their rotation is getting thinned out here.
Yeah, I mean, Carrasco is obviously going to have to carry them for a bit. You mentioned McGill. Who knows about DeGrom? But unfortunately for the Mets, this is like the same old story year after year. But as you said, the good news is they've gotten off to such a great start that potentially if they can just play 500 ball, they have a very good chance to get in the postseason, at the very least at the wild card. Of course, Philadelphia has not played their best baseball. And Davis, there's no doubt the Atlanta Braves have not played their best baseball either. So we still will, you know, have some time to go on that for sure. I know we're going to preview coming up, Davis, but we got some news here in the NBA. And Derek White is going to be out for the Boston Celtics tonight in this game, but they will get Smart back. So, I mean, does that even out? I mean, I think Celtics probably would take that trade off, right?
Yeah, I mean, Derek White missing for them is kind of a big deal. He has definitely been pressed into service over the last 2 series. You know, like he played a lot against Milwaukee and really, really good defensively, but Smart's just going to have to play 40 minutes tonight. Is really what's going to happen. Smart is going to have a lot of responsibility for the Boston Celtics. If both of them were out, I don't really know what their plan would be.
Yeah, I know Pritchard had a good game last time out, but again, counting on that, unreasonable. All right, so coming up next, what we'll do is we'll take a look at the single game slate tonight, see who we got on Davis's lineup. By the way, for all of your NBA DFS, you can go to dailyroto.com and use the optimizer there. Davis and his team putting together lineups every single day all the way through the end of the NBA Finals in June. So make sure you head on over there. We'll also preview today's baseball slate as well, tell you about some lineups later today. This afternoon we got games and then fantasy reality in the Sports Grid 60. So that's what we'll do here on this Thursday. And we will take a quick timeout and be back with plenty more fantasy sports today right here on Sports Grid. So stay on the grid. We'll be right back. Great.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. We've got one game tonight in the NBA. It is the Eastern Conference Finals, Game 2. And Davis, the Miami Heat were 4-point favorites as of last night. This morning, it shifted to Miami minus 3.5. I'm assuming that's because Smart is playing for Boston, but we got the word about 10 minutes ago, maybe 15, that Derek White, because of personal reasons, is not going to play in this game. So I suppose before we set our lineup here on DraftKings, what does that change anything for you with knowing White is out of this one? I think we assumed that Smart had a pretty good chance to play. Now we know he's in, but Derek White being out, does that alter any of your projection here?
I think that kind of opens up some more lineup construction, because Peyton Pritchard on DraftKings costs $4,800, Derek White significantly more expensive at $5,600. That allows you to get into some different permutations. Peyton Pritchard was, you know, basically played the Derek White minutes, because Derek White played the Marcus Smart minutes. White played 29 minutes. Pritchard actually played one more minute, played 30. He got up 16 field goal attempts in those 30 minutes, 11 three-pointers. That was the most three-pointers on the team and almost as many shots as our guy Jaylen Brown took. Jaylen Brown took 17 and 43 minutes. So Pritchard might need to work his way into some of our lineups. We also have confirmation that Al Horford is unlikely to play. Remember, he
is on the NBA version of the COVID list right now. So it looks like he is aiming for a return in game three. And I guess the interesting thing is how much is Daniel Theis going to play? Robert Williams played 28 minutes. Grant Williams played 35 minutes. Those are their, you know, quote unquote big guys. I do think one of the adjustments that they might make is going with a really small lineup when Bam Adebayo is not on the court. There'll be like an 8 minute period where Bam is not on the court. And I wonder if they go with Tatum at center on those lineups and play Pritchard, Jaylen Brown, and Aaron Nesmith all together just to try and get some shooting, because their offense absolutely died in the third quarter of game one. The Celtics scored 14 points in the third quarter of game one, and that Heat half court defense is just so hard to break down. I wonder if they try and go with five shooters at a time.
Yeah, could be. I mean, I would expect the Celtics to play better tonight than they did in game one, but who knows? I mean, these series can go either way. All right, but that being said, let's set a lineup for you tonight over on DraftKings. Here's who Davis is recommending to you. In the captain spot, we've got Robert Williams at 9,300, so there's a chance for a little bit more bonus there by playing Williams if he has a good game. Bam Adebayo of the Heat is priced at 8,400. Jason Tatum on Boston, 10,400. Tyler Hero of the Heat, 6,800. Marcus Smart back in the lineup at 7,200. And Max Strus at 6,400 tonight. All right, Davis, break it down. What do we got?
So Robert Williams, I continue to think is probably the best value on these slates. 28 minutes in game one, 18 points, 2 blocks, 9 rebounds. You know, I think they might decide to go the other way. You know, I just talked about them going small with Derek White out. They might go the other direction and they might go big. We might see 35 minutes of Robert Williams with Grant Williams, with Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Marcus Smart. I think that's clearly their best defensive lineup. Honestly, it will probably depend on how well Tatum does as a scorer. He was pretty inefficient in game one, 29 points on 21 shots, only made 2 of his 3-pointers. Now, this has been a sort of constant criticism of the Boston Celtics, which is their shot diet, especially when Tatum kind of goes into Kobe Bryant mode, is not, it's like choosing to eat Cheez-Its over an apple out of the refrigerator, right? Lots of 18-foot jump shots instead of, you know, 24-foot three-pointers. But Robert Williams is with needing access to Tatum or Butler in most lineups, he's definitely going to be my favorite captain. And then Bam had a pretty underwhelming game one, only 10 points, 4 rebounds. You know, he really took a backseat to Jimmy Butler just put the team on his back. 41 points, got to the line for 18 free throws, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. I mean, probably Jimmy Butler's best ever performance in a playoff game. But I am betting on a Bam rebound. And kind of one of the interesting things here is, you know, if Robert Williams does get into foul trouble, I don't really know what the Boston Celtics do at that point. Like, are they going to play Grant Williams at center? Are they comfortable giving a lot of minutes to Daniel Theis? Like, I think that is going to be a really difficult decision. So I do wonder if one of the adjustments Spoelstra might make so they don't, you know, start slowly in this game is just feeding Bam early, just a lot of Jimmy and Bam pick and rolls when it's Hero and Bam in there, you know, a lot of using Bam as the roll guy, getting him, because you got to force Robert Williams to make decisions, right? And if Bam is rolling at you with the ball, you got to make a business decision there. And if we get, you know, 3 fouls in the first half on Robert Williams, I would make the Heat a huge favorite in this game. And there was a lot of discussion of how good Jimmy Butler was in game one, but I don't think they engineered this comeback without Tyler Hero. He was not very good in the second half when Jimmy Butler took over, but he kind of kept them in it in the first half. I believe he had 16 points in the first half. Max Strus was also not that good in game one, but clearly they lean on him a lot when Kyle Lowry is out. Marcus Smart did not play in game one. I think he might play the most minutes in this whole game because I don't think they want to get Pritchard out there having to guard Tyler Hero, having to guard Jimmy Butler. So I think Smart just plays a ton tonight.
All right. So there's your lineup tonight, Heat versus Celtics. All right, Davis. Well, Boston probably played the worst game that they will play in this series, is a guess. No indication as far as what the entire series may look like, but going into this thing, Davis Boston was at the very least a, you know, a short dog or a short favorite. It feels like when I look at tonight's game and the line is -3.5, that, you know, that a lot of people are on the Heat just simply thinking that Boston does not have enough. But if we've learned anything from Boston before, and they just took, you know, took down Milwaukee, is that if their defense plays well, they can win any game. It's just those cold spells, you know, seem to happen with them. So that being said, is it Boston for you plus the 3.5 or 4? Or does Miami win this one and then they go back to Boston? I cannot imagine Boston losing both of their home games. I guess the question is what happens tonight.
No, I do. I do like Boston here. So, I mean, we basically saw the problem with the Miami Heat, right, in game one, which is it's so hard for them to score in the front court. Now, it would not really be that surprising to me if over, you know, if this game goes six, if this series goes 6 to 7 games, if that's kind of a continuing thing where the Heat start really slow in the first half and get better in the second half. One, they have a smaller rotation. So they're going to play 8 guys in this series. The Heat are going to play 9. Sometimes they might even play 10, you know, depending on if they decide to give Duncan Robinson any minutes. He did not play in game one, but I think they're, with, for example, if they match Duncan Robinson's minutes with Peyton Pritchard's minutes, I mean, there's a spot for Duncan Robinson to hide on defense and they can really use his shooting. But also the other thing is, whether it's Jaylen Brown, whether it's Tatum, those guys are going to need to spend some time on Jimmy Butler, and a lot easier to do in the first half, right? You got all the adrenaline. You just started. Tatum is going to take 20 shots in all these games. But in the second half, Tatum gets a little tired. You know, he's run a bunch of pick and rolls. You've been playing basketball for 38 minutes. It's a lot harder to get your feet planted against Jimmy Butler than it is in the first quarter, for sure.
All right, so there you go. Davis likes Boston a little bit tonight, plus the 3.5 points. All right, coming up next, it's time for us to get ready for some DFS baseball. We've got afternoon games and evening games, of course, in the major leagues, some off days for some teams as well. So we'll have that for you coming up. And then, of course, a little bit later in the show, some fantasy reality or the Sports Grid at 60. 2 o'clock today, make sure you stick with us. I'll be back with you here hosting on Newswire. We'll go over the very latest happening in sports wagering with our contributors from Legal Sports Report and also from the Sporting News. And Daniel Wallach from Wallach Legal joins us on that show later today as well. We'll be right back with some baseball DFS preview. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
And welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. Of course, baseball is on the mind this afternoon and this evening. Craig Mish, Davis Maddock back with you here. Davis, always a Thursday slate that is compelling because we have afternoon games, we have evening games as well. Which slate you want to dive into today?
Yeah, we have the early slate here. I thought the games were just a little bit more compelling. And of course, we get to pick on the Baltimore Orioles. The night slate, your old friend Zach Gallen pitching against the Chicago Cubs, but was not particularly interested in. I just the Boston Red Sox, any slate where the Red Sox are involved, I kind of, you know, convinced myself to try to buy low on Trevor Story, and then he goes 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts again. So we are dialed in to the early slate here.
All right, so let's take a look, and let's pick a couple starting pitchers from the slate, and let's start off with the two pitchers you got, Davis, today. All right, Chris Bassitt, I guess the lone, well, I mean, Carrasco's really good, too. I don't want to knock Carrasco, but, I mean, Bassitt, clearly the head and shoulders leader right now of this Mets rotation without DeGrom, without Scherzer, at least potentially, and then Jordan Montgomery priced at 7,800. What's the thinking behind these two today?
Yeah, so basically with Jordan Montgomery, we are simply picking on the Baltimore Orioles. They are as bad as we thought they were going to be, because not only can they not score runs, but they don't even put the ball in play. You know, they just strike out. And Montgomery actually is, you know, statistically through seven starts, having the best season of his career. ERA a shade over three, seven starts. He's striking out, you know, a decent amount of batters, only a 2% home run rate, 230 batting average against. So, you know, just pretty good stuff from Jordan Montgomery up until this point of his career. And he's priced fairly low. Now, I mean, I guess the one thing you would worry about is he is a left-hander and the Orioles are able to go nine right-handed batters. That's always a little bit of a concern, but the Orioles have one of the lowest implied team totals of the slate. I think we can get 20 points grinded out here from Jordan Montgomery. And then Bassett, pretty much the lone ace of the slate. And, you know, the Cardinals are kind of interesting that we just expect them to be a lot better than they are. They don't really hit home runs. They've been striking out a ton. This is close to their best lineup. Although this Brendan Donovan kid, I don't really know anything about him. He is playing shortstop now with Paul DeJong sent down to the Memphis Redbirds. I saw that he has a bunch of steals in the minor leagues. So I'm always a little bit interested in the guys who get the steals in the minor leagues. But, and I guess to the Cardinals' credit, with the slow start to their offense to the season, they are giving these young guys a chance, right? They're Juan Yepez batting fifth for them. So, but I mean, Bassett's just been really good this year. And against a team that has, you know, he's an extreme ground baller. So against a team that has trouble hitting the launch angle, you know, getting the ball up in the air, I think it's a really good matchup.
All right, so those are the pitchers today. Bassett, Montgomery, again, 10,300 on DK, as well as 7,800 on Montgomery. All right, now let's take a look at Davis's infield as he has it set for today. Yasmani Grandal of the White Sox, 3,700. Trey Mancini of the Orioles is 4,000. Jeff McNeil, also another Met, lined up today at 4,100. Bobby Witt Jr. at 4,500. And then, yes, Ha-Sung Kim makes our show again, 4,800 today for the San Diego Padres.
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing about this slate is, what do you choose to do with the Philadelphia Phillies and the San Diego Padres? Because Darvish is a really good pitcher who is pitching very poorly this season. And then on the other side, Kyle Gibson is a guy who has found something this season, but he's had stretches of being not, you know, very not good in his career, you know, way below league average ERA plus, has struggled with home runs in his career, but has been very good this season. I am leaning on the side of liking the Padres guys because I expect Gibson to pick up some ownership. And of course, Craig, you know that I love my guy, Ha-Sung Kim. I know that he is batting lower in the order today. I could see not playing him. You know, and in fact, how funny is this? We did Fantasy or Reality about Robinson Cano, I think 2 weeks ago. Lo and behold, San Diego Padres, he's playing, and not even DHing for them, by the way, in the field, batting six for them at second base today. But, you know, he's just one of my guys. I also think the Royals offense is pretty interesting today. You know, Vince Velasquez, one of those guys who, I mean, how long have we been waiting for Vince Velasquez to be good, Craig? Feels like this is like year seven of waiting for VB to turn a corner. Just don't think it's ever happening for him. And Bobby is, he's starting to turn the corner. He has hit a couple of home runs. His batting average is up. His strikeout rate, his strikeout rate was above 35% at one time. It is down to 26%. His hard hit rate is up to 40%. So he is, I think Bobby is finally starting to do it. And they're, by the way, the team is rewarding him for that. Started out the year batting seventh, moved up to sixth. Now, look, Bobby Witt Jr., he's the future of the franchise. He is batting third. Of course, we really like, I think we have to really like the Mets today simply because we know that Dakota Hudson just does not get any strikeouts. If you don't get any strikeouts, guys are just going to have lots of opportunities to tee the ball up on you. So I like all the Mets lefties, Nimmo, McNeil. I could see getting tricky with Luis Guillerme if you really wanted to go down that route, but feeling pretty good about him. Mancini, we are going to take one guy against our starting pitcher, just because I think the options at first base are so chalky. You know, I think we're going to see a lot of Abreu, a lot of Rizzo, and a lot of Gavin Sheets as well, so who we have in the outfield. But I think that Mancini, of course, you know, he's like a 35 home run guy in a good season. He's got the lefty versus righty matchup. And Grandal, clearly the best catcher option other than your good friend, JT Realmuto. But I think he'll be about half as owned as Realmuto.
All right, and Romito at DH today. All right, let's take a look at Davis's outfield. He cannot quit Joey Gallo. We've learned that a long time ago. He is 3,200. Why not Aaron Judge? Davis, Aaron Judge is like MVP of the American League right now. Gavin Sheets, 2,800. Brandon Nimmo, 4,500. It's a Mets stacking kind of day. I think you alluded to that before.
Yeah, he definitely is. But our friend, Joseph Gallo, he is not playing today. The Yankees lineup just came out. So I will substitute Trent Grisham, who is leading off against Kyle Gibson. I mentioned that I kind of liked the San Diego Padres today, just kind of as a leverage option there. I was hoping you could maybe explore this a little bit for me. Why do you think the White Sox are playing Gavin Sheets, who's like a fine player, you know, especially at 2,800 in this slate, he's fine, you know, no complaints. But why are they playing him ahead of and batting him in the lineup ahead of Andrew Vaughn? Like, is this a Yermin Mercedes situation where Tony La Russa just doesn't like Andrew Vaughn for some reason?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to dive in and see. I mean, is it on-base percentage? I mean, who has the higher on-base percentage this season? Do you have a clue? I don't. I mean, I couldn't tell you offhand.
I can figure that out.
We have time.
Sorting by OBP, we have Andrew Vaughn with a 316 OBP and Gavin Sheets with a 270 OBP.
Yeah, then
Vaughn,
I don't know.
71 plate appearances, 93 plate appearances for Gavin Sheets.
I mean, he plays Lourie Garcia. You know, he was playing that guy a lot too. I mean, I don't know. There's not really a lot of rhyme or reason, I think. I mean, La Russa is one of the few managers left, Davis, that I know that we think differently, but I mean, he's always been very kind to me, so it's hard for me to talk negatively. But he's the one guy, Davis, that it's like you can bring the analytics to him, and I'm sure that he'll look at them, but he's the one manager in baseball. There's probably others, but he's definitely one that just basically could say, you know, here's the garbage. You know, like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And he has that kind of cachet there, so that's my guess.
And they probably knew that. They probably knew that when they hired him, right? Like, it's not as if this is a surprise. And then I mentioned Brandon Nimmo. Yeah, I mean, Mets lefties today, I think, are really strong. I mean, I guess the guiding principle to know as you head into this slate is that the Chicago White Sox and the New York Yankees are going to be far and away the most popular team. So if you're playing any of those guys, you definitely need to make efforts to get weird or just apply some leverage to the field in other places, because I mean, like, for example, Aaron Judge, by the way, his salary, 6,200. I mean, that is Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani levels of salary. But I mean, we can't fault him, right? I mean, the guy has 14 home runs. He's hitting .306. I think he's got to be, second favorite for the AL MVP. I mean, Ohtani has 11. Ohtani has 11 home runs, bro. He's pitching.
What's the Yankees record? I'm not a Yankees guy, Davis. You know that. But look at their record, man. 20 is it 27?
But look at the Angels record. I think the Angels have they have three fewer wins, I believe, than the Yankees. I mean, they're gonna. I don't think they're gonna win. I don't think they're gonna win the AL West. But well, they might. Honestly, they're very good. This Taylor Ward thing. Taylor Ward leads baseball in weighted on base average over the last month of the season. I mean, it's like unbelievable that they found this guy.
Yeah, I would look. I mean, the Yankees have been good, but Judge has been carrying them. And again, I think Ohtani's the MVP of every season he plays in my opinion.
100%.
But you know, Judge is a Yankee. The Yankees are winning. It's a popularity contest. I mean, Guerrero actually sniffed close to Ohtani last year for winning the MVP. There's that lack of giving the MVP to the guy the second time. So I don't know, man. I mean, if Judge keeps this up and hits 55 home runs, I think he's gonna win it. The other thing that I would say is your guy Joe Adell, I think he's going to be on a new team in July. I think that's going to be the piece they trade to get another pitcher.
Come to Kansas City, Joe. We'd love to have you.
Who does Kansas City have to trade to the Angels for starting pitcher?
Kyle Isbell. We can just swap disappointing outfielders.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess we could look at the Reds and the Pirates. I mean, Joe Adell's going to be on a really bad team in August, Davis, and playing every day.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Somewhere. don't know where it's going to be, but I think it's done for him with the Angels. By the way, still could be a really good player, I think, in baseball. All right, Fantasy Reality is coming up next, and then the Sports Grid 60. So stay on the grid for that. We've got Newswire also coming up at 2 o'clock Eastern. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, welcome back. Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. Before we get to Fantasy Reality, Davis, the PGA Championship is currently underway. And with that, I'd love to get your opinion on the first couple of hours of the opening round here. What's going on?
Well, the course looks amazing. Looks so hard, though. I mean, this course, I have the featured group on here, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and Tiger Woods. And this course looks insanely difficult. Rory is in the solo lead right now. He's about to make the turn. He is on the par 5 ninth right now. Max Homa, Will Zalatoris, Justin Rose, and Davis Riley are all 3 under par. And how about this, Craig? None other than John Daly is 2 Ooh. Under par through 12. I mean, this is shocking to me. John Daly under par right now. I remember his adventures at some of the PGA championships in years past. Tiger is, doing his best. He is battling out there, not playing particularly well. Look, some of these shots, it just looks like his back or his legs are kind of messing with him. He's leaving some of them right. But, I mean, kind of similar to the first day of the Masters, where you can tell he is just working through it the best that he can. And, the wind is not picked up yet, but we have forecasts of lots of wind coming in the afternoon of both days, Thursday and Friday. So I think this course is going to get really hard when that happens.
All right. We'll have updates for you on the show coming up later. And also we have Fantasy Reality starting right now. All right, Davis. Well, the all-rookie team has been announced, and one player didn't really like the result, and that is, of course, Josh Giddey, who took to social media yesterday with his displeasure. We see this a lot now with athletes on social media. So Josh Giddey is basically saying that he deserves to be on the team. Fantasy Reality, Davis, that Josh Giddey was a snub from the all-rookie team, the biggest snub of all.
Because basically it would have come down to Josh Giddey or Jalen Green for first team. These are the guys on the second team with Giddey, Bones Highland, Herbert Jones, who I think is a good inclusion, Chris Duarte, and Io DeSumo. But the idea that Jalen Green on a total losing anonymous team, very similar to the Oklahoma City Thunder, by the way, not as if I am stating that the Thunder are a much higher station than the Houston Rockets right now, other than, you know, their eventual future. The Rockets have no picks, no future. The Oklahoma City have the second pick in this draft, and I believe the 12th pick off the top of my head. But Giddey was really, really good as a rookie, in a way that you don't anticipate. He had a triple-double as a rookie, and, you know, I mean, the unfortunate thing was that actually he had multiple triple-doubles, which is kind of insane for a rookie wing. But he fell victim to actually playing too well. He ended up missing 30 games of the season due to a mysterious injury that there was never a ton of clarity about how injured he actually was. And why did this happen? Because he played too well. He was actually too good and was causing the Thunder to win so many games. So right about the time that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander met his scheduled ankle injury, it's so funny, the last 2 years, Shai magically picks up an injury right about the end of February and just, he's rehabbing, he's working really hard. He can't quite get back. Same thing happened to Giddey. So I'm saying this is a reality. This this is a snub, the idea that he made it in, that Jalen Green made it to the first team over him. The other four guys, I think, are unassailable: Barnes, Mobley, Cunningham, and Wagner.
Yeah. Are you accusing Oklahoma City, Davis, of potentially tanking down the stretch? I don't know, man. Sounds like you are there a little bit, but probably accurate, too. This is why there's a lottery in place. Well, Oklahoma City did get the second pick, so I guess it did work out. All right. Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a reality here, and that's the hard part about this, is that some of the rookies on the bad teams don't get the credit that they should. Giddey, no doubt, had a fantastic season when he was on the court, and yes, reality, he was the biggest snub for sure. All right, let's move on now to the TikTok era, which, of course, gives everybody an opportunity to post videos. Well, a young quarterback the other day posted on social media, on TikTok, that he could throw lefty and he could throw righty. He's an ambidextrous quarterback trying to make his way into college and then, of course, pro football, Davis. And so we thought we would ask the question, fantasy or reality, we will have multiple ambidextrous quarterbacks playing in college and professional sports, fantasy or reality?
I think that this is a fantasy because I don't see the tactical advantage to this. I guess this is what I'll say. Let's say that the split is greater than 80-20, right? So 80% of your throws come with your nominal dominant hand, 20% of your throws come with your nominal offhand. I will say fantasy because I don't like it would allow you a little bit more freedom as a play caller in terms of like, a guy can roll out to his left, a guy can roll out to his right. However, NFL play callers love to do the Vikings are the worst at this, and maybe under new head coaching they won't, but they love to call these Kirk Cousins rollouts where he's rolling out to his left as a right-handed quarterback, and so then you get the back foot throw, and it's kind of like a lob throw. They do this a lot in the red zone. It's like one of my big pet peeves as a football fan. These are like really inefficient plays, asking your quarterback to do that. But in terms of like just a regular, play action, I guess maybe on play action, because you could fake it with either hand. This feels generally unnecessary though. So I'm calling fantasy because I don't think that this will be a system that like rewards you. Like, I don't think kids who can throw with both hands are going to get rewarded in terms of scholarships or contracts.
Yeah, I totally botched the question, so let me read it again. In 20 years, or the fantasy reality, in 20 years, we will have multiple ambidextrous quarterbacks in the NFL. That's what it was. You're going fantasy, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I will say reality, but I don't think that it will matter. Like, I think that what you brought up at the beginning is really the key. What's the advantage here? Like, what's the takeaway? Where can the quarterback succeed that makes this interesting? Now, I will be able to speak from experience, Davis, in Major League Baseball. If you remember I don't know if you do remember, but there's a pitcher by the name of Pat Venditti who threw lefty and threw righty. And he actually went to spring training with Miami in 2020. I think he may have played in a game or two with the Marlins on the big league team. I can't remember. This is like COVID stuff pre or before. Was with the Yankees for a period of time, was with another team for a period of time. He had this one big glove. And Davis, every team Pat Venditti goes to, you know what happens? The TV cameras go out there. They're like, "Oh, look at this great glove. He's a lefty. He's a righty." But the problem was, Davis, he wasn't great. Like, he just didn't make it. He wasn't really that great in the big league. So there's where the tactical advantage is, by the way. If you could have a pitcher throwing lefty and righty and just switch the glove, I mean, that would be huge.
That's huge.
That would be huge. Yes. But it didn't work for him. And no disrespect to Pat Venditti. I'm sure, he was a very nice guy, but he just wasn't a great pitcher. It's just his novelty was doing that, and that was it. So I will say reality that they'll be ambidextrous, but I just don't think they'll be throwing lefty and righty in a game. I don't know that it will matter. I guess it matters when the defender, Davis, is grabbing your right hand, and then you put the ball on your left, and then you're able to like toss it. We've seen that, but beyond that, I don't see the tactical advantage, as you mentioned. So I'm in agreement. All right, now this is one that I'm not entirely familiar with, so this is not up my alley. You probably should be doing this more than me. But apparently Offset unfollowed some people on social media, on Instagram, if I'm not mistaken here. And so, of course, this has to do with Migos. So we're wondering if this is the end. Fantasy reality, Davis. And please, if you have any more background, I'd love it. This is the last we have heard of Migos.
I'm saying reality. So here's the background. Migos is made up of three guys: Quavo, Takeoff, offset. These are they're three guys from Atlanta. They've actually been embroiled in some controversy in the past. These guys, they love to make the headlines. They do. I mean, their music is like fine. I wouldn't say I'm like a huge Migos fan. It's mostly fine. But here's what happened. Two of the guys, Quavo, Takeoff, they announced that they're doing their own thing. They're making music just the two of them without the other one. So then the third guy, he's mad. I mean, this is like Kyler Murray unfollowing the Arizona Cardinals and removing all the stuff from the social media, right? This is the music equivalent of tracking who Kyler Murray or whoever, athletes unfollowing the teams or whatever. So I'm saying, in reality, this is the last that we will see music projects from these three fellas together.
What's the biggest Migos hit, in your opinion? What would I know from Migos?
You would know Bad and Bougie. That's the one. I was trying to think of what that one is. If that came on, you would have heard that in a grocery, like an edited version of that in a grocery store or whatever. You would definitely know that. It's a very I think of these guys as like a very 2018 phenomenon.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Good. Good to get educated on Migos here on the show. That's where I need to be. I stopped with hip hop and rap 20 years ago probably, but I'm still on that classic stuff. So yeah, I mean, I guess I just have to just simply side with Davis on this one because I am not the person to answer this. But I would say that usually when players, people unfollow on social media, it's a pretty big indication that something is going on, which is why, Davis, I don't understand why they do it, because we all know it. Like when Debo Samuel does it and when Kyler Murray, as you mentioned, does it. Isn't it just much easier to do nothing and keep the mystery out there? Or do you think that they do this so we're talking about it on shows like this?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's gotta be, it's always about the leverage, right? You know, it's 100%. It's always like, I'm doing this for a negotiation tactic. I'm doing this so that Complex reports on, I mean, that's why Debo Samuel did it, for leverage, right? He doesn't want to play. I, which by the way, this is so funny. I literally think Debo just doesn't want to play with Trey Lance. I literally think that's it. I think Debo watches Trey Lance in practice and is like, this dude can't get me the ball. I don't want to play with him. And he would prefer to play with Jimmy or someone else because Debo wants to get paid, right? Debo wants to get the bag. And if Debo has a bad season or a more average season this upcoming year, then he's not going to get paid. And I think that he thinks Trey Lance will make that harder for him.
Yeah. Do you, on social media, on Twitter, if you see that somebody unfollows you randomly, do you unfollow them or do you stay with them? How do you handle that? Do you even check that?
I don't check it, but if I did notice it, I would definitely unfollow back. Like 100%, like it's not as if I'm checking who follows me, but right, if I clicked on someone's tweet or whatever and I saw they didn't follow anymore, 100% unfollow, probably mute, honestly, probably unfollow plus mute if someone unfollows me.
Yeah, I noticed that. Like, I probably check that sort of stuff once, maybe twice a year. Like, I really don't. But I probably a few weeks ago, Davis, I checked and I was like, why? I saw some person unfollow me. I was like, why is this person unfollowing me? Like, what would be the point of that? And I did the same thing. I didn't mute, but I did. I was like, okay, look, you don't want to follow me anymore. All right, so be it. I don't have to follow you anymore either. But yeah, it's interesting, that dynamic. I would say probably twice a year. I mean, I really have to be bored and have nothing to do to be able to do that. That's probably embarrassing that I even have the time to do that. All right, coming up next time for the Sports Grid 60, and then we got to get out of here. We got Kevin and Donnie standing by to give you the early line once again. That's coming up at noon Eastern right here on Sports Grid. So stay with us. We'll be right back with our final thoughts, the Sports Grid 60.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Make sure you tune in at 2 o'clock right here on Sports Grid, because Vinny Iyer from, of course, the Sporting News, and Pat Evans from Legal Sports Report will be with me on the show. That's 2 o'clock Eastern right here on Sports Grid on Newswire. Let's turn it over to Davis as we wrap up the show with today's Sports Grid 60.
So right now we have the PGA Championship teeing off for the first day, and they're playing at Southern Hills, a golf course, a club down in Oklahoma, Tulsa. And I'm just watching this course. Obviously, I've never seen it before. I think the last time they played here on a PGA Tour, if I'm correct, was 1999. Tiger Woods happened to win that event. Of course he did. And this is what I wish they would do for the PGA Championship. I wish that instead of doing a rotation, right? I mean, we see Whistling Straits, we see some of the courses out in New York, and we see them a lot. You know, they're on a rotation. I wish the PGA would use their major championship as a way to showcase, you know, all these different courses, right? Let's play down in the South. Let's play in California. Let's play in Florida, right? Like, let's see new courses, because I love that. I love seeing new holes, new challenges, new features that they have in the courses. Like, I'm loving seeing this new course.
All right, when college football created the NILs, name and likeness agreements, where players could get paid, we knew that some sort of form of free agency was going to be created. But what we didn't know is that two of the best coaches in college football were going to hate each other like poison. I mean, you thought it was bad before between Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. You have no idea whatsoever. Jimbo Fisher today essentially going in on Nick Saban for a straight 5 minutes talking about all these different crooked things that Saban has done over the course of his career. Of course, Saban threw Jimbo Fisher under the bus, saying Texas A&M bought their team for 2022. This is going to be some incredible back and forth with all college coaches in the next few days to see what they say. I'll have that for you, by the way, coming up today at 2 o'clock on Newswire. That'll do it for the show. Thanks to LTN, for Danny and Ryan, and of course for David and Brett Levy. I'm Craig Mitch. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. I'll see you at 2 o'clock. Great.